And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. Today, we're pleased to be joined by the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, Sarah Dooling. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing wonderful, Ted. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Thanks for joining us, because one of the things that I was hoping we could talk about today was an issue that has, in my own mind, grown over the last two or three years to become an increasingly important issue for climate activists to think about. And in my own case, it rewinds all the way back to the Water is Life movement with the Dakota Access Pipeline out in the middle of the country, where all of a sudden you realize, like, wait a minute, the fossil fuel industry is rolling over these people. And since that time, it's only grown to the point where I've become highly conscious of things like Cancer Alley down in Louisiana, where the fossil fuel companies are poisoning people. We have instances right here in Massachusetts in Weymouth, where the environmental justice standards are not, well, I mean, we got an issue there, and the state of Massachusetts is, you know, still wrangling with whether or not environmental justice is something we want to put in our law books, right? So these are issues that have grown over time. And I think that it's important for us to grapple with it. And I guess my question to you is what's the connection that you think as executive director with MCAN and these issues around energy and social justice?
That's a really great question, Ted. And this is something that MCAN and the coalitions we are part of, including Mass Power Forward, including the Environmental Justice Legislative Table, including the Green New Deal Table, including the HERO Coalition. These are all so many people, so many advocates and organizations are staring at the legacies of racial injustice in the context of all of their work, all of our work. And so there are clear connections between wanting to undo our racist structures, which include everything from housing finance to the school to prison pipeline, to how petrochemical industries pollute entire regions of this country.
Redlining.
And redlining, exactly, all over this country, all over Massachusetts. So the connection between undoing these racist systems and developing climate solutions that empower, right, that alter the status quo from environmental justice communities always bearing the brunt and the burden of polluting industry, for example, of not being able to bounce back as quickly due to flood, or actually being burdened with disproportionately really high utility bills for heat and for cooling. Right. So this is what so many organizations right now are trying to figure out in the climate movement. Where does racial justice sit in our work? And for MCAN, our internal process as a team and as staff, we have landed on the climate movement is really a racial justice movement. And environmental justice communities are the first places where we think of directing benefits to coming out of climate solutions. And so if our society does not work to undo these racist systems, then all of our climate solutions that are developed will, by default, perpetuate the oppression, perpetuate the violence, and perpetuate the exclusion of Black people and households from making decisions, from securing the benefits, from enjoying healthy homes and healthy communities.
And I would take that a step, I think, not further, but I mean, also observe that it seems to me that honest to God solutions to climate change cannot be achieved without the racial, I mean, it's not like somehow these things are a do-good right? Because it's morally justified, right? It's like if your climate solution does not address the issues that are inherent and linked to these social justice issues, it's not going to work, right? So it's not like you're going out of your way taking on extra work. And it's like, this is all part and parcel of the same issue, right? Because of, I put words in your mouth, but I mean, sort of, if you can have a sacrifice zone, then where you put all bad stuff in, well, then you're going to have fossil fuel. But you have those, resolving those things go hand in hand, right?
Yes, absolutely. And this is something that is foundational now to the climate movement, especially for white people. We are having our reckoning, right? This is our work to undo. This is our work to undo, and it is both kind of a personal and professional internal moment for reflection, but it has to drive our work, right? It has to come out and get expressed in new kinds of more comprehensive policies that link job creation to carbon emissions reductions, to tuition reimbursement programs for first generation or socially vulnerable people who want to become part of the electrification trade.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, I've made the case in many places, and I think it's a fascinating subject, that I went to college many years ago on a national student defense loan, right? Mm-hmm. Which was the justification for paying for my college education was because we had to defeat the Soviets. Right. Mm-hmm. This goes back. I don't even want to say how far, but this goes back. But I mean, it's like, and that nowadays, there's an organizing principle at the time about fighting communism. Now, organizing principle has to shift, and the organizing principle of society has to be around fighting climate change. So now there's this wide set of things that get, you know, from healthcare to a jobs guarantee to, you know, all these things. The justification is, oh, yeah, well, this helps us fight climate. Right, because anyway, that's my take on it. I don't know if you agree, but
that is very interesting. And I just want to make a comment about the law that I have been working with MCAN staff on around how do we describe what we're doing within the climate movement. And increasingly, I'm becoming less enamored with this idea that we're fighting climate change. Increasingly, I am and staff are thinking about we are building the foundations for a better future. And it is in that language, I want to de-emphasize kind of the militaristic approach. And it's really about partnering and reaching out to vulnerable places and people and creating spaces for Black empowerment, for Latinx empowerment, and creating spaces that allow them to make decisions about their future.
Yes, yeah. And I agree. I mean, those kinds of things are the positive statement works. And it's an interesting, you see that trajectory over the years, you know, big fight climate change as opposed to the, I guess what strikes me is the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez video of building the much more positive thing. We're building a future. We are defining the future by building it, which I completely agree is a good way to think about things.
But it's both, right, Ted? I think it's both. I think we have to dismantle the fossil fuel industry and the violence that it perpetuates on Black and Brown and Latinx communities. But then we also have to build up something better, right? Cleaner energy, renewable energy sources, democratizing the grid so that everybody has a choice about the kind of energy that they want to have in their lives. Mm-hmm. And that especially environmental justice communities can get access to clean energy, renewable energy, and to the jobs that are part of a Green New Deal economy.
So tell me this, as at least I strive on the show to demystify words that may or may not, people may or may not be familiar with. And I think there are some floating around in this, I didn't want to use the word space. It's so 2020 in this, but I mean, tell me things like energy democracy. If somebody hears that, what should they think of? Energy equity. I mean, I call them buzzwords only because once you know what it means, you can use it, but it may bump into, people may not know what you mean by that. Are those words relevant to the stuff that you're working on? And what should people, you know, what I keep saying is, the second time you hear the word, you say, oh yeah, I already know that. I heard that on the Climate Minute podcast. So what are those words, what do those words mean? And
Right. Thank you, Ted. So these are words that have come into my universe over the past 4 or 5 years. And they're important because they mean different things. Energy equity is related to energy democracy, but they're different. And so energy equity is about how accessible and how affordable the energy supply is in a given region or for a given group of people. And so there are all kinds of measures that describe how accessible and how affordable electricity is, for example. And there's been a lot of research, academic and nonprofit research, that demonstrates pretty clearly that Black households pay sometimes up to 3 times more for a utility bill compared to an average white American household.
I read something that talked about that issue, saying that disadvantaged communities are more often to be renters, and consequently the efficiency, and so they have to run the heating more, and therefore the bills. And so there's that, and there's conceivably that the utilities are charging different rates in different towns. So, I mean, there's probably both of those things fold into an equity concept, right?
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And so how the rates are structured by both the private utility companies and the public utility companies, a lot of researchers are looking into this. And MCAN in particular, we publish a scorecard on how the public utilities in Massachusetts perform in a variety of different areas. And we have a new scorecard coming out February 2021. It will have a short narrative section on equity. We haven't collected data on the accessibility or affordability of energy. We do know within these MLPs, we do know that some MLPs, based on 2017 data, I believe only 17% of the muni districts offered what is called a low-income utility rate. And so I am curious to see what the new data set will reveal, whether the percentage of MLPs has increased or stayed the same. Mm-hmm. But that is something that MCAN will be focusing on going forward within the public utility realm, is to ensure, one, that there are low-income utility rates in place, and two, to try to better understand, and this is a very serious energy equity issue, how there's another program that many MLPs offer, which is called
MLP means what?
MLP is Municipal Light District. These are the public energy utility districts in the state of Massachusetts. We have
cities and towns that have their own little, instead of going to NSTAR, they have their own little homegrown utility that they own and can control.
Okay. Yes, there are 40 or 41, depending on how you count, of these muni districts, as they're called in the state of Massachusetts. They're all over the country, and how they are run varies state by state. The first MLP in Massachusetts was founded in 1892 in Wellesley. So they have been around. This is a fascinating history of a public entity. So I encourage people to look into the history of MLPs. It's really interesting. And if anybody knows where their archives are, please let me know. I would love to go into the archives. Maybe they're probably at the state somewhere. I don't know where. However, to go back to this idea of energy equity, as Ted mentioned, there oftentimes public utilities charge one group of customers or residents a little bit different so that they can subsidize or assist a different group. And one of the questions I have a keen interest in is figuring out whether another program, which is called the on-time discount program, where if you live in a muni district and you pay your bill on time, you get a certain percentage off your total bill. You could get 10% off. You could get 5% off. And so that is great for folks that are able to pay their utility bills on time. But research has demonstrated over and over that Black and Latinx households typically have a hard time paying their utility bill on time, especially when we're talking about now during an economy that is contracting, right, during really high unemployment.
Don't get me going.
Exactly. So one of my MCAN's emerging interests is trying to unpack the relationship between the potential relationship between the on-time discount program. Does that actually favor middle-class ratepayers over the more economically vulnerable, lower-income ratepayers? So,
and I mean, I think that's the kind of nuanced question that addresses energy equity, which is an important one to begin to address. One thing I was going to say, the concept of people living houses that they cannot afford to winterize, right? Is that like a social justice issue to help winterize that, or is that a climate change issue? Right, it's both, right? It's simultaneously the same at the same time. So back to the so there's energy equity. People have an idea now, and they say, "All right, I heard Sarah Dooling explain that." The other one that I'm interested in hearing about is something called energy democracy. So where does that come from?
Right. So that is actually, that comes out of a combination of political science and political ecology. These are just scholars and activists that think about, again, how social justice and climate justice intersect with each other. And so energy democracy is this idea that consumers actually become producers of energy. They own their energy source. They own the energy infrastructure that generates that source, and they decide about their energy future. So this goes back to different models of democracy developed in political science and sociology, where people, everyday people in Brookline, in Methuen, in Fall River, in Amherst, in Lee, have the option to decide about what kinds of energy that they want to purchase. So presumably the assumptions behind this idea of energy democracy is that over time, people will opt for more clean and more renewable sources of energy. What you said earlier in the podcast, how you opened up this podcast, Ted, around the extractive economy of the fossil fuel industry, how it creates really bad health outcomes that are experienced generation after generation in places like Cancer Alley, in Native American reservations, as pipelines get dropped in against their wishes. Energy democracy is trying to say we don't want those violent extractive industries anymore, that we want as a democratic society to be able to be legitimate decision makers about our clean energy future, because it benefits our bodies, it benefits our buildings, it benefits our landscapes, and it is critical for our collective survival as humanity. As a species, right? So energy democracy is a less well-known term compared to energy equity. But if we don't have energy equity, we can't get to energy democracy.
Interesting.
If we cannot provide accessible, affordable energy, we cannot live in an energy democracy society.
We have touched on a small portion of the many things that MCAN is working on. I think that defining terms is a good place to begin. I would love to have you come back and chat at some point about affordable housing, energy efficient, affordable housing, right? Because I know that ties into it. If anyone's followed us this far, clearly that's going to tie into things like energy equity and to be able to have good indoor air quality, good weatherization, and a decent home at an affordable price. Those are all things where I think the word is intersectionality. Maybe we can define that one as well in a future podcast. But I think we need to stop at this point. Let me say, Sarah, what we'll do is put up links to some of the things that we talked about on the blog. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog, where you can catch the podcast. If you have any questions about this stuff, please send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. We'll pick it up. If you have ideas about shows, what we should be talking about, what we should not be talking about, or things like that, please let us know. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite distribution apps and to rate us on whatever, wherever you are. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure, Ted. And if people feel like they want to reach out to me directly to talk about any of these ideas, if there are any MCAN chapter people listening, I would love to connect with you. My email is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, @massclimateaction.net. So thank you again, Ted. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.
Very cool.